The yard is already loud before the sun clears the roofs. Steel rings against steel, not polished, not perfect. Real hands, young hands, chasing timing before school starts. Bags dropped on concrete, sticks borrowed, nobody is paid to be here, nobody is forced. For years the pan sat quiet, rust crept in, elders watched and stopped asking who was coming next. Then the noise came back, not announced, not approved. Teenagers found the sound online, in clips and shaky videos, and decided it belonged to them too. They rehearse between jobs and homework. Phones light the yard while rhythms tighten, old rules bend, new ones form fast. Respect is earned by showing up, not by age. Pride replaces obligation. This is not nostalgia. It is pressure. If the sound does not live now, it dies quietly. Every note tonight carries that weight, not history. Survival. Chapter 1. The sound that refused to die. The panyard wakes before the neighborhood does. Not because it is organized, but because the young players arrive when they can. Some come straight from night shifts. Others show up in school uniforms, shirts untucked, bags dropped at the edge of the concrete. The steel pans are already warm from the night air. Sticks tap lightly at first, testing tone, checking memory. Then the volume rises. This scene is unfolding again across Trinidad and Tobago. Not in grand concert halls, not under banners or sponsors. It is happening in backyards, empty lots, school compounds, and tight spaces between housing blocks. Places where sound carries whether permission was granted or not. For a while, those spaces went quiet. In the years before the pandemic, participation among younger players had already begun to thin. Elders noticed it first, fewer children lingering after school, more empty chairs during rehearsals, arrangers adjusting parts because sections were missing. The sound never vanished completely, but it softened. It lost its edge. Then the pandemic hit, and silence settled hard. Yards were locked. Instruments sat untouched, rust bloomed where hands once polished. The steel pan survived wars, bans, ridicule, and neglect, but this kind of stillness felt different. It was not resistance from outside, it was absence from within. When restrictions lifted, many assumed the break would finish the job. That young people, already drifting toward other sounds and screens, would not return. That the chain had snapped quietly. That assumption did not hold. The return did not come as a ceremony. There was no announcement, no official revival. It started with small decisions. A teenager scrolling through old rehearsal clips, a school music room reopening with no budget but unlocked doors, a borrowed pair of sticks, a single pan rolled out of storage and struck once, just to hear if the note was still there. It was, early rehearsals were uneven, timing slipped, attendance shifted daily. Some nights only 5 players showed, other nights 20 arrived without warning. What mattered was that they came back again the next day. Not because they were told to, because they wanted the sound under their hands. These were not children raised inside panyards. Many had never played formally. Some had never stood through a full panorama season. The tradition they were stepping into was inherited at a distance, filtered through stories, recordings, and reputation. That distance changed the relationship. They were not guarding memory. They were testing ownership. Older pan leaders noticed the difference immediately. The questions were different, less about rules, more about why parts worked the way they did, less patience for hierarchy, more focus on results. If someone could play, they led. If they could not, they practiced. Respect became practical. Arrangers adapted or lost rooms. Long lectures thinned attendance. Short instructions held it. Rehearsals tightened. Songs were broken down faster. Repetition was enforced by peers, not authority. If someone missed practice, the section sounded weak. The consequence was audible. That was enough. Technology sat openly in the yard. Phones recorded runs. Notes were shared through group chats. Missed sessions were caught up on overnight. This was not secrecy or tradition guarding itself. It was exposure. The sound traveled quickly. Clips spread beyond neighborhoods. Friends showed up because they saw something moving, not because a parent signed them up. The steel pan was no longer framed as heritage first, it was framed as skill. That shift mattered. For decades, the instrument carried the weight of representation. It was proof of survival, creativity, resistance. Those truths remain. But for this generation, they are background. What sits in front is performance, mastery, the thrill of locking into a run and feeling the yard react. The sound had to earn attention again. Some elders resisted this framing. They worried about shortcuts, about discipline slipping, about meaning thinning out. Those concerns surfaced early, especially when younger players skipped rituals or questioned structure. Arguments flared in yards that had not heard conflict in years. But something else happened alongside the tension. Attendance stabilized, not everywhere, not all at once, but enough to notice. Where there were once 3 players under 18, there were now 10. Where rehearsal used to drag, it now started on time because players wanted the full run-through before someone had to leave for work or class. The sound grew sharper. This was not nostalgia pulling them in. Many of these players had no childhood memories of golden eras. They were not recreating what was lost. They were discovering what still worked. They learned quickly that steel pan is unforgiving. Miss a practice and the hands show it. Drift during rehearsal and the rhythm exposes you. There is nowhere to hide behind effects or volume. The metal reflects everything. That honesty appealed. In interviews and informal conversations, young players described the pan as grounding, not calming. Grounding. It demanded attention. It forced presence. In neighborhoods saturated with noise and distraction, the discipline of tuning into one sound, one role, offered relief. The panyard became a space where effort had immediate payoff. School administrators began noticing changes. Students involved in pan programs showed up earlier on rehearsal days. Teachers reported improved focus from those balancing music with coursework. These were not official studies, just patterns observed quietly, the way community knowledge moves. Parents followed the sound. At first, many were skeptical. Steel pan, for some, still carried old associations, late nights, unstable futures. But seeing discipline enforced peer-to-peer shifted perception. Rehearsals that ended on time, clear expectations, visible progress. The instrument regained credibility not through history, but through behavior. The revival did not erase hardship. Many panyards still operated without consistent funding. Instruments were shared, repairs were delayed, players pooled money for transport. These constraints shaped the culture as much as any ideology. Scarcity forced commitment. When there are only so many pans, attendance matters. When one tenor carries a line, absence is felt immediately. This created accountability without speeches. The sound itself enforced standards. Observers from outside the culture often missed this detail. They spoke of revival as a wave, a trend, a resurgence driven by visibility. On the ground, it felt different. It felt like survival tactics being rediscovered. The steel pan had always thrived under pressure. This generation simply found its own version of that pressure. They did not romanticize struggle. They acknowledged it and worked around it. Rehearsals were scheduled around bus routes. Practices shortened when fatigue set in. Efficiency replaced endurance. What mattered was progress, not punishment. This pragmatism unsettled some traditionalists. Long hours had once been proof of dedication. Now focus carried more weight than exhaustion. Arguments over what counted as commitment surfaced repeatedly. Yet the sound continued to improve. The first public performances after the return were modest. School assemblies, community events, small stages with uneven sound systems. The reaction was immediate. Audiences leaned in, phones rose, comments followed online. Not about history, about energy. Young players saw the feedback in real time. Their work reached beyond the yard without translation. This reinforced participation. The steel pan stopped being something you explained. It became something you showed. What began as scattered returns started to look like a pattern. Elders who had resigned themselves to quiet yards began stopping by again, not to lead, to watch. Some offered advice carefully. Others stayed silent, observing how sections corrected themselves. Relief mixed with unease. The sound was alive, but it no longer needed permission. This chapter of the steel pan story was not being written as a tribute. It was being written as a test. Could the instrument survive without being framed as legacy? Could it hold attention on merit alone? The answer was forming nightly, one rehearsal at a time. But survival through interest is unstable. Attention shifts, trends move fast. What holds today may not hold tomorrow. The question was no longer whether youth could play. They clearly could. The question was whether this return could endure pressure, conflict, and change without breaking again. As the sound grew louder, so did the stakes. Because once a tradition is reclaimed, it must prove it can carry weight forward, not just echo the past. Chapter 2, Pressure, Pride, and the New Players. By the time the season thickens, the yard feels different. Not louder, tighter. The players know each other now. Weak spots have been exposed and either fixed or left behind. Attendance is no longer casual. If someone misses two rehearsals, their part is reassigned without ceremony. Nobody argues. The sound decides. Across Trinidad and Tobago, this pattern repeats. Youth-led bands move from survival mode into performance mode. The shift brings pressure. Not the romantic kind, the practical kind that shows up when expectations rise and excuses stop working. Balancing rehearsal with daily life becomes the first test. School schedules clash with practice times. Jobs run late. Transport fails. Some players rehearse hungry. Others show up exhausted. The difference now is that no one pretends these obstacles are unique. Everyone is carrying something. That shared reality creates a quiet standard. Show up anyway, or step aside. Pride replaces nostalgia. For many of these players, the steel pan is not a fallback. It is a choice competing against other options. Music software, streaming platforms, sports. The pan holds its place only if it delivers something those alternatives cannot. Community without dilution, skill without shortcuts, recognition earned face-to-face. That demand sharpens behavior. One of the most visible changes is who stands at the front. Young women are no longer clustered in expected sections or treated as novelty. They carry leads, they anchor rhythm, they correct mistakes openly. This is not framed as progress, it is framed as competence. If a player can hold the line, they hold the line. This shift does not come without friction. Some older members struggle to adjust, comments are made, boundaries tested. The response from the younger cohort is swift and unsentimental. Respect is enforced by sound quality, not argument. If the section improves, the issue ends. If it does not, the conversation moves on. Innovation enters through necessity, not rebellion. Younger arrangers and section leaders experiment with structure because attention spans are shorter and rehearsal time is limited. Long introductions are trimmed, breakdowns are tightened, familiar melodies are reworked to land faster. The goal is not shock, it is clarity. Outside observers label this fusion. Inside the yard, it is efficiency. Elements from hip-hop, electronic music, gospel, and contemporary Caribbean styles surface naturally. Not as overlays, but as rhythm choices, tempo decisions, and phrasing. The steel pan absorbs these influences the way it always has, by being struck until it fits. Traditionalists voice concern about dilution, about losing identity. Those debates are not dismissed, but they are reframed. Younger players ask different questions. Does it move people? Does it hold together? Does it sound right under the hands? If the answer is yes, the argument weakens. Discipline shifts shape during this phase. It becomes internal. Players correct themselves before being told. Sections rehearse independently when full band time is unavailable. Mistakes are addressed immediately, not saved for later. The yard develops an edge that comes from self-policing. This self-regulation creates speed. Progress accelerates. Runs that once took weeks to clean are locked down in days. Not because players are better trained, but because feedback loops are shorter. Phones record, playback exposes flaws. Pride demands correction. Social media amplifies pressure rather than easing it. Clips circulate quickly. A clean run draws praise, a sloppy moment draws comment. Young players are aware that their work is visible beyond the yard. This awareness does not inflate egos, it sharpens focus. Embarrassment is a stronger motivator than authority. At the same time, visibility brings opportunity. Invitations arrive for performances outside traditional spaces. Schools, private events, community programs. These appearances test adaptability, different acoustics, smaller ensembles, limited setup time. The PAM players adjust. These performances carry stakes beyond exposure. They reinforce legitimacy. Each successful appearance strengthens the argument that steel pan belongs in contemporary spaces, not just seasonal ones. Youth see tangible returns on effort, not money. Momentum. Conflict intensifies as commitment deepens. Players begin questioning leadership decisions, rehearsal schedules, song choices, section balance. These disagreements are not polite, they are direct. The yard becomes a negotiation space where authority is constantly tested. Some bands fracture under this pressure. Sections leave, leaders step down, groups split and reform elsewhere. This instability is not a failure, it is selection. Structures that cannot hold youth energy collapse. Those that adapt survive. Elders watching from the edges feel conflicted. On one hand, the sound is alive. On the other, familiar hierarchies are gone. Knowledge is no longer passed down by position alone. It must prove itself repeatedly. Some veterans step in to mentor quietly. Others retreat, unwilling to adjust. The younger players do not chase them. They are not rejecting tradition. They are refusing dependency. This independence is both strength and risk. Without elders anchoring memory, certain nuances fade. Stories go untold. Techniques are improvised rather than inherited. The question becomes whether innovation can compensate for gaps in transmission. The younger generation senses this risk, even if they do not articulate it openly. They begin recording elders when possible, asking specific questions, seeking advice selectively, not out of obligation, but out of strategy. They want to be good, not symbolic. As competition approaches, whether formal or informal, the atmosphere tightens further. Rehearsals stretch later. Arguments sharpen. Standards rise again. Mistakes that once passed now trigger immediate correction. This is where commitment thins. Some players drop out, unable or unwilling to meet the demand. Others step up unexpectedly. Roles shift, leads change hands. The band reshapes itself in real time. What remains is a core defined by pressure tolerance. The steel pan has always revealed character under strain. This generation experiences that truth firsthand, not through history lessons, but through exhaustion, frustration, and pride earned in clean execution. By the end of this phase, the revival no longer looks fragile. It looks demanding. It asks something of everyone involved: time, focus, humility. The question is no longer whether youth are interested. They clearly are. The question is whether this intensity can be sustained without burning out the very people carrying it. Because evolution brings speed, and speed tests endurance. The next stage will decide whether this movement stabilizes into inheritance or fractures under its own weight. Chapter 3. Inheritance or echo. The season ends without ceremony. No closing speech. No final count. The yard empties the same way it filled. Players peeling off to jobs, exams, family obligations. What remains is quieter now, but not hollow. The steel pans are stacked with care. Sticks are tied together. Someone wipes fingerprints from a tenor before locking the gate. Small acts that signal continuity. Across Trinidad and Tobago, youth-led groups carry the sound beyond the familiar calendar. They play when there is no title to chase. Schools ask for assemblies. Hospitals request short sets. Funerals call for something steady and human. Street corners host pop-up performances that draw crowds without promotion. These appearances are not glamorous. They are practical. They keep the hands active and the sound present. This off-season presence changes perception. The steel pan stops feeling seasonal. It becomes available, a tool that can answer moments as they happen. Young players learn adaptability fast. Sets are trimmed, transitions tightened, mistakes corrected mid-performance. There is no safety net. The audience is close enough to hear breath and missteps. Veteran pan pioneers begin to show up again, not to take over, but to watch. Some stand at the edge of the light. Others sit quietly on folding chairs, listening for familiar phrases bent in unfamiliar ways. The reactions are mixed. Pride surfaces. So does concern. The sound is strong, but it carries a different posture. Less ceremony, more urgency. Conversations happen after performances, not during rehearsal. Elders offer pointed advice. Tune this note. Watch that tempo. Remember why that break exists. The younger players listen selectively. They ask follow-up questions. They take what fits and test it the next night. Advice that works stays. Advice that does not fades without argument. This is how inheritance is negotiated now, through results. Formal education systems move slower. While steel pan enters some classrooms, most transmission remains informal. Mentorship happens in yards, garages, and borrowed rooms. Knowledge is passed during setup, teardown, and late-night troubleshooting, not through syllabi, through proximity. This approach has limits. Without structure, gaps emerge. Tuning techniques vary wildly. Historical context thins. Terminology drifts. Young leaders recognize the risk but resist rigid frameworks. They fear bureaucracy more than loss. They choose flexibility and patch holes as they appear. International attention grows quietly. Youth-generated content travels further than official campaigns ever did. Short clips reach diaspora communities and curious outsiders. Invitations arrive for workshops and collaborations. Travel is limited. Resources are thin. Still, the signal is clear. The sound resonates beyond its birthplace when framed as living, not preserved. With attention comes pressure to represent. Young players are asked to explain meaning, to speak for tradition, to perform authenticity on demand. Some accept the role cautiously, others reject it outright. They did not pick up the pan to become spokespeople. They picked it up to play well. This tension sits unresolved. Inside the movement, fatigue becomes visible. Sustaining intensity without institutional support takes a toll. Leaders juggle logistics nightly. Equipment breaks, transport costs rise, players burn out. Some step away temporarily, others return after weeks, hands stiff but willing. The difference now is that absence does not collapse the group. Depth exists, skills are shared, roles rotate, the system absorbs loss better than before. That resilience is the quiet success of this phase. Critics still question longevity. They point to past revivals that flared and faded. They warn that novelty wears off. Young players hear this but do not dwell on it. Their focus is narrower. Get through the next rehearsal. Clean the next run. Book the next performance. Survival has become operational, not ideological. Elders who once feared erosion begin to recalibrate. They see mistakes corrected quickly. They hear respect embedded in execution. They acknowledge that reverence without relevance never held for long. Some adjust their expectations. Others remain uneasy. Both responses coexist without open conflict. What matters is that the sound continues. In moments of reflection, young leaders admit uncertainty. They do not claim to be saving anything. They speak about pressure, about responsibility they did not ask for but now carry. They understand that visibility brings accountability, that every choice shapes perception. They also understand that freezing tradition would kill it faster than change ever could. As months pass, the steel pan settles into a new posture, less guarded, more exposed. It lives in hands that grew up online, in neighborhoods shaped by speed and noise. It competes daily with distractions that never sleep. That it holds space at all is a measure of strength. The final test is not applause or approval. It is persistence. If the yards remain active when cameras turn away, if rehearsals continue when no event looms, if young players keep choosing the pan when no one is watching, that will decide whether this moment becomes inheritance or echo. There is no closing verdict, only evidence accumulating slowly. Tonight, a small group rehearses under dim lights, no audience, no phones raised, just repetition and correction. The sound tightens, someone nods, another player resets their grip. The steel pan does not ask to be remembered, it asks to be played. And for now, that answer is still yes.